Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Rebel Leadership, How to Thrive in Uncertain Times by Larry Robertson, narrated by Tom Parks. An opening. Opening up to a new view of leadership. A certain world may be what we want and what we wish for, but it is not what we need, and it is not what we have. That's how futurist Tom Koulopoulos summed up the times we live in. He wasn't referring to a single moment or event. He was describing this uncertain century in total, from its wobbly first 20 years to as far forward as a futurist can see. This is our new truth. We live in a world more uncertain than certain, a fact most of us have yet to fully embrace. It's not as though we are unaware of or ignore the uncertainty around us, so much as it is that we treat it like we have always treated uncertainty, as temporary, limited, and something from which we can shake ourselves free. But the world has changed, and we must change to reflect it. As some of the wisest minds and today's most impactful leaders will tell you, to do otherwise is a dangerous strategy, and perhaps the greatest threat to people and organizations today. Koulopoulos is one of those wise minds. Having spent the past 30 years providing thought leadership and guidance to some of the world's leading organizations, his views are extremely well-informed. More than just an advisor of best practices, he's a behaviorist. He doesn't just theorize about business or technology trends. He looks at what people actually do. His insights derive from direct experience, but also from good lineage, including the likes of Peter Drucker. A management consultant, educator, and author, Drucker was highly regarded for his oracle-like sense of things. He had an uncanny way of sifting through the obvious to see what most people missed, and then, repeatedly across his career, accurately predicting the major developments to come. When I spoke to Koulopoulos in 2020, he told me a story about sitting down for a lunch with Drucker in early 2000, right at the turn of the last century into this new one. Koulopoulos wanted to know what one of the greatest minds of the last century thought about the century that was just unfolding. He said when he asked, Drucker didn't hesitate. His thoughts about the new century had been gelling for a long time. While Drucker had much to say, Koulopoulos said one thing stood out above all the other observations Drucker made. He told Koulopoulos that he firmly believed we were entering a prolonged period of uncertainty, not simply in business or in the U.S., but as humanity and in the world at large. This, Drucker said, would reshape everything. Why did Drucker feel this so strongly, I asked. Koulopoulos said that when he asked the same question, what followed was nothing short of a history lesson. Drucker was never one to lightly theorize. He built his views on fact, and the fact was, Drucker said, most of us were missing the elephant in the room. He believed that much of what had come to define the latter half of the 20th century was temporary, even though to most it felt permanent. The distinction mattered enormously, Drucker told Koulopoulos. This ambiguity masquerading as certainty had had broad, sometimes imperceptible impact, including its influence on our mindsets about the future and leadership and our readiness to meet the challenges yet to come. Drucker pointed out, for example, that for more than four decades, the world viewed itself in the long shadow of two world superpowers. While today it might seem like a lesser historical fact, in reality, it shaped countless aspects of our lives. Consciously or not, organizational structures and styles of leadership weighed anchor in this narrative, one of us versus them, of supreme power concentrated at the top, and of winner-take-all, to name but a few storyline elements. In addition, the work environments for the overwhelming majority of sectors assumed a kind of steady-state mentality, and gradually, even if unintentionally, forged a strong belief that things would stay the same. Though by 2000 the facts underpinning this storyline were largely gone, Drucker believed its lingering effects were not. He also noted that while these things had been taking place, the actual landscape had continued to move. Trucker believed that movement was about to speed up. One clear indicator, he said, was the growing democratization of and access to technology and education. The more people had access to both, the faster the false scaffolding around our institutions, markets, and governments would be revealed. All of this and more, Drucker said, not only meant the unavoidable shedding away of a false sense of stability, but the emergence of a novel form of uncertainty to a populace that wasn't practiced in dealing with it. It's worth noting that Koulopoulos made a point of telling me that Drucker didn't see any of this change as inherently bad. In fact, he said, he believed that the kind of upside transformations only talked about in the past now had a high likelihood of not only becoming real, but having impact far beyond what had previously been imagined. He believed those advancements would come quickly and be built upon, at least by those tuned into these shifts and willing to change with them. Since that fateful lunch 20 years ago, a new kind of leadership has been steadily emerging, a wave of those seeing leadership through a wholly different lens, a groundswell not simply of individuals but entire organizational cultures, cultures of rebel leadership. This book is about exploring that movement. Before we do, we need a clear sense of what we're talking about and what we're looking for when we say words like rebel and leadership or culture and movement. The change happening right before our eyes. The hardest thing of all is to see what is really there, author J.A. Baker wrote. The same could be said about an in-depth interview with Walmart CEO Doug McMillion that appeared in Harvard Business Review in March of 2017. Just a short 3 years before, McMillion had taken the lead at the retail giant. It was a tumultuous time for the company. Growth was slowing, competition was on the rise, and Walmart was still very much an organization in transition. After more than 50 years serving customers from physical stores, for instance, it was still navigating the implications of serving customers through both digital and in-person formats. All while that customer base was shifting and becoming increasingly complex. For most of its history, Walmart knew their customer as the actual person who walked in the door. They knew what they did when they were in the store, what they took home with them, and often knew the person themselves, who was more likely to be a neighbor than a stranger. Now, that customer was increasingly showing up as a hard-to-track blend of digital and physical. They could be a commenter on social media one day and an actual shopper the next. And they could come to Walmart from anywhere on the planet, not just from down the block. There are so many points of unknown, and therefore of potential disruption, Russell Schaefer, Senior Director of Global Culture, Diversity, and Inclusion at Walmart, shared with me in an August 2020 interview. Referring to those ever more complex customers, he said, even if they physically walk into the store, if for any reason they don't like the experience they're having, they can pull out their device and shop with someone else, one of your competitors, from the comfort of your store. Or they can voice their displeasure, taking a photo or posting online, and have it immediately radiate to dozens, hundreds, or millions. It's fair to say that when Sam Walton founded Walmart in 1962, he could hardly have imagined a customer who could shape-shift from real to virtual, lover to hater, and from your customer to your competitions in a single click. It wasn't just slow growth and a complex customer base challenging McMillion. The entire retail landscape was changing, fast and forever. So dramatic was the change that it was becoming hard for Walmart to confidently identify who its competition actually was or to figure out how to best them. The choice McMillion faced was how to lead in such uncertainty. Or, as the HBR piece put it bluntly, how to bring Walmart into the future without blowing the franchise? In such conditions, what should a leader do? A whiff of rebellion cloaking a tsunami of change. To say that Doug McMillian's early moves at Walmart were unconventional would be an understatement. Right from the start, McMillian seemed to flaunt accepted leadership standards, not in a troublemaking or contrarian for the sake of being contrarian way, but in a wise, considered, and confident style. Still, his unexpected actions left many perplexed. A pointed example? Where most leaders would be expected to curb expenses in tight, uncertain times, McMillian did the opposite. He boosted wages for hourly workers. This, in turn, increased expenses, not to mention morale, commitment, and loyalty. There were those who raised an eyebrow at McMillian's actions, especially other leaders. Increasing wages at the bottom of the organization decidedly leaned toward the needs of labor, when tough times had long offered arguable cover to do the reverse. Why would McMillian do what he did? Because he knew leadership was no longer something he could define or pursue alone. He needed those hourly earners in a whole new way, not just as doers, but as leaders themselves. If it had been a single move, perhaps no one would have really noticed. But as those early months and years of McMillian's tenure unfolded, it began to feel as though nothing was off-limits to reconsider. As a further example, prevailing leadership logic would have suggested that, especially in turbulent times, he should stick with the proven. Things like firming up the company's commitment to the physical store model, or leaving leadership exclusively in the hands of those who'd brought Walmart to its market-leading position. McMillian did neither. First, he increased the company's commitment to online sales. Next, he revamped the executive team. And then he told Walmart's 2.3 million employees that his goal was to leverage the collective perspective, wisdom, and experience of everyone. Short of that, he said, Walmart would have a tough time sustaining its leadership position deep into the new century. You, every single one of you, McMillian was saying, must lead. It wasn't just his actions that smacked of leadership rebellion. His language diverged from the familiar script as well. At shareholders' meetings, in documents and memos, in interviews, pretty much every time he communicated with anyone, McMillian talked less about his role as a leader and more about the leadership necessary not just to carry Walmart into the future, but to shape that future. I'm not doing this alone, he repeatedly said. These weren't statements of abdication of responsibility as CEO. They were signals of how his view of leadership was something quite apart from the belief that other leaders, the marketplace, in truth, most of us default to. That the individual leader equals leadership. If I were married to the things we've always done, McMillian said, not only about the way Walmart had operated for decades before him, but about the role of the leader, I'd be holding the company back. It's the kind of goodwill window dressing statement that in the past a leader might make at a shareholders' meeting before returning to the top-down, well-worn approach everyone expects. The difference was, McMillian meant it. These counterintuitive and bold moves were far from isolated and hardly anecdotal. They reflected a focus and a vision of leadership that began to sound like a mantra. And to the thoughtful observer, that's precisely what it was. Not his mantra as the CEO, but Walmart's, a powerful organization whose only way to maintain that power, McMillian was signaling, was to pursue a culture of leadership. To him, it was about Walmart leaning into the future by leading in an entirely new way. And that's exactly what he was trying to make clear to readers in his conversation with HBR. Through much of the interview, they covered the typical questions leaders are asked about competition, dealing with labor, and whether or not Walmart was serious about bold, future-looking initiatives like energy conservation and sustainability. Though the queries were familiar, within each answer, McMillian seemed to be saying something more, something different, subtle at first, but consistent and growing. And then, he was asked a question out of step with the rest. Do you ever feel that the pace of change is out of control? It was a question refreshingly freed from the expectations of what any of us, good leaders included, should think or do in such times or with such disquieting feelings. It was also precisely the question that, increasingly, each of us wants to ask. Macmillan was not only ready to answer it, he'd already been living it. As if taking the conversation to that next level he'd been aiming at all along, he answered this way. "Once upon a time," he began, as if giving a nod to an old story before telling a new one, "a company like ours might have made big strategic choices on an annual or quarterly basis. Today," Macmillan said, "they're daily." He said he even joked with other leaders that, in truth, such dilemmas are now hourly. Such a challenge stretches beyond the scope of any one leader, as Macmillan had made clear throughout the interview. It requires not a mythological superhero, but a whole new mindset around what it means to lead. His blunt admission was a moment of authentic candor, a brief window through which to glimpse what the most impactful leaders are thinking about now. It was a chance to hear a leader like Doug Macmillan talk about the most vital elements of successful leadership in this new century, of leadership being shared and moving, of innovation permeating the entire organization, and of things that sound so simplistic, like purpose, yet hold the key to success. It was nothing short of a gift. Yet, seen through an old lens, it was easy to miss. Doug Macmillan is a leader in touch with the very world Peter Drucker said would come, and indeed has come. In response to that changed world, Macmillan is creating a culture of leaders, 2.3 million globally to be exact, who sense and embrace the same uncertainty and know it is their collective job to meet it successfully. Russell Schaefer made that clear with this simple, poignant anecdote. "One of the things Doug says all the time," Schaefer told me, "is that at Walmart, the only constant is change. It's something every one of us knows it's our job to lean into, including Doug. He actually carries a list of retailers around with him, a top 10 in each of the decades, going back to the beginning of Walmart's history. What's most telling is how many of those organizations no longer exist," Schaefer said. "We don't plan to be one of those. We is what makes it an odds-on bet that they won't be." The New Abnormal. Macmillan's response to HBR was first and foremost a bold admission. No one knows for sure what will happen in a world where big strategic choices occur hourly, not even one of the most informed and influential leaders on the planet. If you're skeptical of the relevance or ramifications, or if perhaps you've already concluded that Macmillan and Walmart are outliers, consider this as well. In a 2017 PricewaterhouseCoopers PwC survey of 1,749 CEOs spanning dozens of sectors and countries, a stunning 82% of leaders said that the economic future of their organizations was, to put it bluntly, unpredictable. 82%. Then take note of this. It's the very same answer a majority of leaders have given every single year for more than a decade in similar surveys. If that doesn't give you pause, check your pulse. That's the view from current leaders. But the impact of this changing landscape extends further to include future leaders. Not long before she came to Airbnb as global head of diversity and belonging, Melissa Thomas Hunt was a member of the leadership team at the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business. Darden is a proving ground for future leaders and known to be a tough one. I asked Thomas Hunt what she'd observed, not only in the range of leadership roles she herself has filled over the past 20 years, but also among those in training to become leaders. Even the way she began her answer spoke volumes. "I don't talk about this often," Thomas Hunt told me, "but the thing that has been most profound is seeing the steep rise in the stressors people feel," she said, referring specifically to the up-and-coming leaders admitted to Darden. They'd be tested in any event in the program, challenged just to get a handle on what it means to lead in the world and to succeed. but the assumption is built in that they'd have time to learn and adjust to it all. And then they quickly realize that's now gone. There's no cushion, no time to learn or absorb as there once was. The impact is huge, including the impact on the psyche. Our students weren't just aware of the challenges, mental and otherwise. The new demands were so great and insidious, they began to openly articulate them and to concede a greater demand on leadership than they'd ever anticipated. Tom Koulopoulos calls it the uncertainty principle. The idea that as uncertainty increases, the time to react decreases. When that happens, Koulopoulos says, people don't want to speed up to keep pace with the change. They want to slow down. They want to take more time to consider their options. Trouble is, as Thomas Hunt makes clear, that added time no longer exists, even, it turns out, in a simulated environment. The world has changed. When it comes to meeting that change, the old ways aren't working. And yet, by and large, we, our leaders included, are not changing with the times. This is the new reality Doug McMillian and others you'll hear from in this book are trying to wake us up to. Some of what you're about to hear may at first appear simple, but don't gloss over the meaning behind the words or the gentle yet dire warning they hold for leadership. These insights hold the keys to why those you're about to hear from are thriving and will continue to thrive in these volatile times. The truth is, there is no more normal. Normal implies an environment that is typical or acts in predictable ways. Today, regardless of sector, role, or goal, that doesn't describe anyone's world. Abnormal is our new normal. If the times and conditions are changing radically, so too must our views of leadership. There's a pattern of such change, one that goes far beyond McMillian, Koulopoulos, Schaefer, or Thomas Hunt. A growing cadre of leaders across sectors are openly trying to tell us something vitally important. In this uncertain, complex, and increasingly ambiguous world, our ability to sustain and progress far into the future depends on us seeing and pursuing leadership in a whole new way. This book is about embracing that truth and with it a new mindset, the mindset of rebel leadership. Rebel Leadership, the Mindset. Rebel leadership is a new term that relies equally on its two parts, rebel and leadership. Taken alone, to rebel is to go against the norm. On its own, leadership is about encouraging others forward, but right now, neither is enough. If all we needed in today's environment was more rebelling, isolated disruption or occasional bold action would suffice. Similarly, if successful leadership in this moment in time was simply about being good in a single capacity or role, then well-worn views of who leads, how and why might be sufficient. But the need in these uncertain times is for a new kind of leadership, one that fits the landscape, challenges convention, and fosters a constant search for new and better ways forward. One defining aspect of rebel leadership that makes it completely different from our default impressions of either rebels or leaders is that rebel leadership isn't about the talent or genes of single individuals. It's not about the privilege and power we assume is only afforded to those with the titles or those credited with starting something. Instead, rebel leadership is a cultural mindset. It's an approach and advantage that arises from the many rather than the few. The call right now is clear. We need something radically different. We need to retrain our minds and reform our habits to meet this moment, but also to sanction ourselves to fully and forcefully reflect who we are in any time, not just volatile times. Everyone feels it. Many have moved toward it. It's time for the rest of us to follow suit. This is your guidebook. Rebel Leadership, the Book. It's not the obvious, and it's not the cult of personality around individual leaders that is enabling organizations as wildly different as Airbnb, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Pixar, World Central Kitchen, the Iceland National Men's Soccer Team, Warby Parker, Grameen Bank, Microsoft, Folden, and others, to outperform their competitors right now. It's the mindset of rebel leadership. At the heart of that mindset are five patterns that together define a framework for how to thrive in this turbulent new century. Rather than being opinion or speculation, these patterns derive from my 30 years of research in three topic areas most closely associated with the kind of change and adaptability necessary for success in the current environment: creativity, leadership, and entrepreneurship. Tellingly, the foundations of that research cut across disciplines from psychology, neuroscience, and social science to studies in business, management, and leadership. Rather than rest on the academic or theoretical, the insights of rebel leadership are deeply rooted in what works in actual practice. The patterns shared here are backed by over 300 in-depth interviews with some of the most creative and successful leaders on the planet. They include storied executives, famed entrepreneurs, brilliant writers and researchers, MacArthur Genius Award winners, Nobel laureates, and others leading and achieving at the highest levels, with or without the headlines. As you hear about these patterns, I want you to experience what it's like to lift the veil and look inside at what's actually happening in rebel leadership organizations, and to feel as though you're having the conversations yourself. Even the titles of the chapters that share these five patterns seek to place you there, borrowing the language rebel leaders use to describe what really matters. Let them laugh. Soul matters most. Soul. It's what rebel leaders say lies at the heart of success, no matter how much the environment might change. Chapter 2. Leadership moves. Counterintuitive, even heretical to some, leadership only realizes its full potential when it continuously moves across an organization. Chapter 3. It's the culture, stupid. The greatest competitive advantage and the thing all else supports is most often treated as an afterthought. Yet culture is the true difference maker between success or failure. Chapter 4. Your power source is your superpower. Most think a changing world means risk and risk-taking. The truth is, both are relative. The more important task is knowing your power source and honing it into your superpower. Chapter 5. The long view matters right now. Rather than being the stuff of someday or tomorrow, taking the long view matters most in your immediate actions. It is the only reliable way to arrive at your desired destination. Chapter 6. Though the individuals and organizations you'll meet in this book ply every imaginable trade and produce a myriad of unique products and services, the five patterns exist across them and unswervingly prove to be the key to their success. Rebel leadership will not only reveal these patterns, but will teach you how to tap into the power of the framework they form and make it your very own. That framework and the mindset of rebel leadership are the opening you need to learn how to thrive in uncertain times. Before diving into that framework, it's important to fully understand what these uncertain times truly mean that makes rebel leadership so vital. Chapter 1. The Changing Landscape of Leadership, Our New Abnormal. Profound Change. For two decades, the world around us has been changing in ways not previously experienced or imagined. The data proves it. It's both broad and compelling. And yet most have not absorbed the significance. This is true in part because over the past 20 years, not everyone was affected in equal or even obvious ways. But the bigger reason is that, in one way or another, we expected the changes to eventually calm down or go away, the way change used to do so reliably in a past century. And then came the winter of 2019-20, and the arrival of coronavirus. The pandemic was an outsized harbinger of these uncertain times, arriving rapidly in the extreme and sparing no one. Not everyone caught the
sample complete. Ready to continue?